This is the What Matters Most podcast. A 100% listener-supported program. And now, here is your host, Paul Samuel Dolman.
Welcome back to What Matters Most. I am so excited and inspired today for a multitude of reasons. One, I'm just grateful. So happy to have you as a worldwide audience and the Patreons and all the people in different countries who listen. And honestly, the farmers, the CEOs, the young people, the students, thank you. Thanks for taking some time and listening and sharing in these beautiful soul stories, which are our guests. Today, I am super excited because I am a longtime admirer of our guest. And I always thought, man, I would love to have her on. How does that happen? And then my dear friend, the patron saint herself of the What Matters Most podcast, Marianne Williamson, said, I have someone staying with me. Would you want to have them as a guest? And when I found out it was this beautiful soul, I did a backflip. So my next little sore. She is a social justice advocate, national campaign manager, candidate, truth teller, media personality, but more than anything, just on the right side of things. It's such an honor to welcome to the family for the first time, Miss Nina Turner. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, Paul, it's so wonderful to be on with you. And yes, the patron saint herself, Marianne Williamson, she's such a great matchmaker. And I'm so glad that she brought us together. This is beautiful.
Nina, where does your fire for social justice come from? Were you born this way or who had an influence? How did it evolve?
I think it is a little nurture, nature. You know, we've had that debate. We continue to have that debate as a species. Is it more nature? Is it more nurture? I would say for me to be in the social justice space, it's a little bit of both. I mean, I come, you know, from a working poor family, but my grandparents were solidly middle class, born in the early 1900s, having to work really hard, you know, 1914, 1915, you get the picture. And, you know, being Black in America, certainly they were not born at a time where opportunities abound for Black people in this country, but they worked extraordinarily hard to try to make it, fighting against the odds. You know, you get it. This is a story that is not unique to me as a Black woman in America, and by extension, not necessarily unique to anybody from any background who comes from a working class family. But when you are Black in America, given the way that Black people came to this country, you get it. I mean, Black people of African people, American descendants of enslaved people. So, but my grandparents just worked so hard, and my grandmother in particular instilled in me the sense of that there is a God, there is a power, there is a force that is greater than humankind, even though it doesn't seem like it all the time, and that we have to answer to that power, and the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And my mom, the same thing. So here we are, you know, long story less long. It came from a liberation theology tradition within my household, and also the lived experiences of both my grandparents on both sides, maternal and paternal, and my parents.
Do you ever just marvel and are in awe and humbled by the resilience of your ancestors and the generations and what they have overcome for you to be where you are? And I know we have a long way to go, but when I think, and it wasn't that long ago, what these people survived and some thrived, it really takes my breath away. And it really brings a tear to your eye too.
It does, Paul. I do. You know, you have those moments in life where you go into deep reflection. I try to do that on a regular basis, but especially as the holidays come around, you know, thinking Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's in particular, where I think there's a psychological reset for most of us. But I take that reset on a regular, consistent basis in my life. And yes, I do marvel, because but for resilience against all the odds, but for resilience against a structure and a nation, even before it was a nation, that hated and denigrated and rejected and subjected American descendants of enslaved people, I would not be here today. And so I am humbled by the resilience of my ancestors, and the fact that in the 21st century, although we are not where we need to be in this country by a long shot when it comes to racism and all the isms and then anti-Blackness, but for them, Paul, I would not be here. I would not have been able to have, you know, senator, you know, serve as an Ohio, a senator from the great state of Ohio, or a Cleveland City councilwoman, or to have, you know, even have a master's degree, dabble in a PhD, I mean, just all the things, all the titles that I can name, Paul, if it were not for the people who came before me, I would not be in this position. And I do recognize it's tenuous. You know, none of this is permanent, especially as we look at the world today and inflation and the suffocation that people from the working class are feeling. And I call all of us working class, because unless you got a sugar mama or sugar daddy, a trust fund person, you are one emergency stressor away from not being that. So some of us are blessed enough to be in the upper echelons of the working class. But if you must work for a living, i.e. you cannot afford to live years and years and years and years without working, you are part of that working class. Yes, I am forever humbled by their journey and the sacrifices they have made for me to be where I am today.
I want to say preach it. I always felt when I hear you speak, I said, you know, she could have been a preacher.
My mama was a preacher, Paul. That's where I get it. You know that about me. Like, I joke sometimes in my speeches. My mama made us go to church. I'm the oldest of seven children. 8 days a week. You hear me? Like, 8 days a week.
But you got that fire from the church, from the pulpit. You have it when you speak. And I think that's what moves people. I hate milquetoast consultant bullshit. Give me the fire.
Me too.
Give it.
Come
to
on,
me.
Baby. Come on. Yes. Coming in hot.
We need to shake it up.
That's the only way change happens, is you gotta make good trouble. As Congressman John Lewis is famous for saying, you gotta shake it up.
It's sad. I know your mom died young, about 42. You must miss her every day.
Every day, Paul. Whenever I have a milestone, I think about her. I try to channel her energy and her spirit. Sometimes I cry. Sometimes I can think about her without crying. And sometimes I do cry, because she died with her dreams deferred. You know, Langston Hughes, one of my favorite poets, in one of his poems, he asked a seminal question: what happens to a dream deferred? And even though my mother was privileged in a way to live in a middle-class family, she was the only child. So given that frame, you would think she could grow up and be anything she wanted to be, but life is never a straight line. People endure things. And my mother endured a lot and was troubled in some ways as I reflect on her life. But I was in my early 20s, the oldest of seven children. All of us are 2 years apart. Don't know how my mom did that, but she managed to do that. And my baby sister at the time was around 11 or 12 years old. And that shook my world, Paul. I did not know if I was going to be able to carry on. I was a sophomore at a community college, Cuyahoga Community College in Cleveland, trying to become a cycle breaker. And that shook my world. And I could have went the other way. I could have allowed it to stop me in my tracks. But instead, I used my mother's untimely death to motivate me, to catapult me, to do things to make her proud, even in death. And so my mother never lived to see me walk across that stage at Cuyahoga Community College, but I took that degree in her name, and I took it in the name of my young son at the time. And then I matriculated to a four-year university. None of us do these things by ourselves. I'm just giving you the less long version of a very long story. I had many people along the way who motivated me, who uplifted me, who spoke life into me at one of the most pivotal, crushing times of my life. Seven children. My mother didn't have a life insurance policy. She didn't have any money in the bank. Paul, I had to raise money to bury her. My mother was a Christian. She did not want her body burned. And I remember having an elder say, just, you know, cremate her. She won't know. And I said to this person, and they didn't mean, you know, I don't think, they weren't trying to be malicious, but that was didn't show a whole lot of compassion, right? But they were being very practical. I put that in air quotes. And I said to this person, but I would know, you know? And so I did raise the money and the grief to make sure that my mother had a proper burial. And I used that situation to help me to continue to push. And here I am with a master's degree, and I dabbled in the PhD, and then I let politics whisk me away. I got to go back to that, Paul, but here I am, you know, all of these accomplishments, being a national co-chair on a presidential campaign, you know, really being able to ascend to some very higher heights as defined by society. And my mother never lived to see any of it, but I do it for her memory and also for my son. I think in many ways we are fighting for the past, the present, and the future. You know, we do things for the past. If you believe in a connection to your ancestors, whoever they may be, it doesn't have to be from African descent, but then you do it for yourself and you do it for the future, your children and your grandchildren. And that is what motivates me.
Do you feel her with you? Does she ever come to you in the dreams? My parents come all the time.
They do.
I had a long life with them and I got to take care of them the last 10 years of my life. Thought I was doing it for them, ended up being the best thing I ever did for me. But I grieve a lot. And they've been dad 4 years, mom two. But I just like, man, sometimes as much as I have it made, I think, God, this is hard. I miss you all. You're my best friends. And I feel them and I'm with them at night in my dreams. I'm telling you, I'm not crazy. I've had people, we do shows about this. It's different than a regular dream, but it's tough. Life is great, but it's a little less great without them. But does she ever come to you in any way? Do you feel her?
Well, amen to what you said. I don't want to just step over what you just laid down. I mean, your parents just recently passed away. I can tell you my mom has been gone for over 20 years. Some days it seems like it just happened yesterday. And other times it does seem like it's been 20 years. Yeah, she does come to me in my dreams. I commune with her on a regular basis. And that's something that we have to do. I don't think in this culture, you know, like the Americanized culture is kind of like dead is dead. But for somebody like me who grew up in that kind of tradition, and we know the other cultures across the world, they reverence the dead or the people who've crossed over a little differently than we do in an American culture. I think about Black Panther, right, and the ancestral plane and how the Black Panther went back to that plane as he was getting his next assignment, and even when he passed away and was coming back into this world. And so that's what it's like, I think, for me. And to hear you describe it, there is an ancestral plane. And those of us who have experienced that kind of loss of our parents or any other loved one, I want them to know as they listen to us that those people are very much alive because they live through us, and their spirit and their essence is very much alive. So even though their physical presence is not here, the essence of who they were and who they are to us in real time is alive.
And I remember that great scene where the Panthers are in the tree and then they come down, and he's actually giving them a hard time too, because they were, you know, about opening up and being inclusive. But thank God for the spirits. How did you come to find your voice so beautifully and so clearly? And I know it's an ongoing process.
It is, because I still sometimes, even with all I've experienced, feel like I don't have my voice all the time. But it was, I don't know. I'm shy. Can I just say that to you? People don't know that about me, because anybody who does know me and they've seen me in the political space, they're like, oh my God, this woman. But yeah, I am an introvert in many ways. Yeah, when people see me on the scene, when I'm fighting for or fighting against, yes, I'm there with a fierceness that can, an infernal, you know, but to know me one-on-one is to know that I am more of a shy person. So it's hard. It's evolutionary when you say, you know, how did you find your voice? But I certainly had a grandmother, my mother's mother, who I was very close to, who would impart not a little nuggets of knowledge that we call in the African-American community mother wit. I was raised in a church, a Black church, to help me find my voice too. And my oratory skill is definitely reflected in that Black church upbringing. But I know when you say voice, it's not just a voice by which to give a bit speech to. It's also a voice to know who you are and what you stand for. And I must say, definitely my grandmother and the Black church helped me find my voice.
And I love that voice. And I know what you're saying about being shy. I recently was on a show where I got interviewed, and I said, it just blurted out, but it was the best description I'd ever said. I said, I'm an extroverted recluse.
Yeah.
And they were like, what? And then the host said, I think I am too. So it's like, if you catch me, man, this guy is just, he can speak and da da da. But it's like an iceberg. Most of the time I'm quiet. I'm in the woods. I love to read. Too much people, too much all of it, I start to deteriorate. But it's like, you take me out of the hangar. It's like that car you can't take far. Man, that's beautiful. We should take that cross country. Cross country? It won't even go cross county. Bring it, put it back in the garage, let it sit. But that's a good take.
Yeah, that's me. I love it.
How are you so undaunted by the powerful forces that are always lined against you?
Oh, you know, when you're going through it, you know, it's like going through hell with gasoline clothing on. There's a quote, I think it was Winston Churchill who said, when you go through hell, keep going. You know, and I picture that, like, why stop? You got to keep going to get out of there. You can't stop. It's because I know that I'm fighting for universal truth, I consider myself a hell-raising humanitarian. That keeps me going. And I know I could have taken the path of least resistance. I could have been on the neoliberal side. I could have just went with the status quo and everything would have been fine. But I would not have been able to live with myself. And I think it is more important to live with myself. It was Frederick Douglass, and I'm really paraphrasing, is doing no justice to his quote, but he said something to the effect that I would rather, you know, have you not like me or have you abhor me than to have self-abhorrence. And I'm rolling with that, Paul. So those kinds of things give me the strength to keep pushing. And also I know that people greater than I and people who had to make even more sacrifices than I have had to make. Yes, I make sacrifices. You make sacrifices. We make sacrifices in our own time, no doubt about it. But for me, when I think about the type of sacrifices that my ancestors had to make in particular, you know, being on auction blocks, not having autonomy to their body, being chattel, it's all relative. So the sacrifices that I have to make in the 21st century, the hell that I have to catch in the 21st century, it is nothing compared to what they had to go through. So I use that too to fuel me to make it on through. And the fact that they fought against the status quo, you know, fighting for Black liberation was fighting against the status quo, fighting to get the right to vote or the right to read or the right to own something or the right to just even control your own body was fighting against the status quo. So I come from a people who have always fought against the status quo, even though some in the 21st century have forgotten that as they align themselves with the status quo. But for me, those are the memories and the experiences that help keep me grounded and keep me courageous and keep me pushing forward. But it's still hard though, Paul. I want people who are joining us today to know that even though I lean on those things, it doesn't make it easy for me because I feel pain, I feel hurt, I feel disappointment, you know, like anybody else. And it does hurt to have people come after you for no reason at all. You know, I told Jink when I was being interviewed on TYT, I said, if being for universal healthcare is wrong, I don't want to be right. If believing that people should unionize is wrong, I don't want to be right. If believing that children in this country shouldn't go to bed hungry at night is wrong, I don't want to be right. If believing that people should be housed is wrong, I don't want to be right. So there it is. I am standing with and on the side of many people greater than I who both live today and lived in other lives who stood for the kinds of things that we stand for. So if that is wrong, then hey, I don't want to be right.
Well, I stand with you, and part of my brain wants to explode that the things you just said are radical ideas in America. For Christ's sakes, yeah. Go to Denmark. Every other place is doing those things, basic human rights. And if you say stuff like that, they give it a word that 99% of the people with their mouth open breathing don't understand. And it's good for them and good for everybody. Like everything you just said to me is just human decency. And I couldn't live with myself if I was against those things or if I stayed quiet. I'd rather, hey, put me in the, you know, take me out, but at least I'll go out in glory. I don't want to be quiet for basic human dignity and decency and that be this rich and to still have to all the struggles that just are such a waste of time and resources. Can you imagine if we had nurtured the last 150 years, 300 years, all the great minds of all colors, how far along we would be and all the money. But I don't understand. I come from another planet, so I'm just trying to do my best here amongst y'all. But it's just crazy. Just feed the people.
I'm on that planet with you, Paul. I come from another planet.
Feed the people. What the fuck? Open the warehouse up. The food's going bad. Give them the medicine. It feels good to at least try. You know, whether we're doomed or not, I don't know. I try not to think too far ahead. But I feel like you have to try. Or else, what's the point of your life?
That's it. What's the point? No, I mean, you're absolutely right. And when you talk about other countries, they question us. They think we're crazy that we don't have universal health care or that the cost of college is so high. You know, and we are a hegemon nation. There really is no excuse for us not to have a more robust social contract. People like you and Marianne Williamson and Reverend Barber and so many others, we're not radical. You know what? We are, because radical just means getting at the root. But we are where the people are. The folks who are out of touch are the people who don't believe in these things and the people who don't want to fight for these things. They're the ones that are out of touch. We're not out of touch. We are in touch. We are in touch with the type of humanity that demands these basic. I mean, we're not even asking for anything extraordinary. I mean, look at our sisters and brothers and family and friends in Jackson, Mississippi, for example. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, to have clean water, to demand clean water, clean air, clean food. People think that that is somehow asking for too much. Paul, no, I'm on that other planet with you. And I love the way you describe that. I'm going to have to borrow that from time to time. I'm from another planet, baby. This is just here visiting.
We are. We came in, a bunch of us on the ship. That's right. All arrogant and happy. And then, like, man, that's a pretty place. Look at that. The oceans, you got the forests. What do those folks in the white hoods want? Y'all, hey, run for your lives. What you were saying is so true. And we have brown water. There's no drinking water. Yet we have a $1 trillion defense budget. And someone asked me the other day, they said, are you a progressive? And I said, yeah, I'm basically for progress.
That's it. Who is it?
Are you not for progress? No, I'm a regressive. Want to go back.
Well, now Paul, we do have some regressives though. I mean, we're joking about that. We have. Yeah. Roe v. Wade, you know, for example. Nope.
No, they want to go back to 1850.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they do.
Put you back on the auction block. And the irony is in Jesus' name. White Jesus, not regular Jesus.
Yeah, white Jesus, not black Jesus. No, it is true. And if we don't listen to what, you know, really pay attention to what is happening, we will find ourselves, we are going backwards. Roe v. Wade is just one example of going backwards. You know, the critical race theory debate, one example of going backwards. When you hear white people talk about wokeness and what does it mean to be woke, especially on the conservative side, that really is a dog whistle for being anti-black. We are going backwards. Wages are not keeping up with inflation. People are really making less today than they were making 10 years ago, when you saw for inflation and when you have people like Dr. Robert Reich, former labor secretary for President Clinton. Oh my God, Paul, isn't he amazing? He talks about how the system, the economic system by which we find ourselves under, is not immutable. Like, it's a set of rules and policies that were created by people. And so we can create another set of rules and policies. It's not a state of nature. And I love how he lays that out. And so I do want the people in this country in particular to understand. I mean, I know we have an international audience and people from other industrialized nations in particular think we are out of our minds, and we are. These things are not immutable. They can be and they should be changed.
Yeah, this isn't like natural law where you outlaw gravity and stuff. Or the founding fathers. That's, yeah, right. We have to do everything like we thought in the 1700s. No, you can't use an MRI or a CAT scan or a cell phone. And we use whale oil. You know, I mean, it's craziness. You worked with Bernie Sanders in 2016, 2020. I was a huge supporter. And I was using the show to say he was robbed, man. And whether it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I don't have to tell you, or they never counted the damn votes in California and the endorsements and superdelegates coming out. And Bernie would have won. I'll go to my grave saying Bernie would have won. Even Trump said Bernie would have won and invited him to join him because he said they screwed Bernie over. It's one of the few honest things Trump ever said.
That's right. One of the few. You know, my grandmother used to say even a broke clock is right twice a day. Yeah, he did get that right. No, the senator was robbed. Not only was he robbed, America was robbed because it's bigger than him. And you know what our mantra was, not me, us. He meant that. And yeah, we all were robbed because of the powerful coming together to say, we don't want this kind of change. They saw the force by which this country, especially younger generations, really rallied behind the Sanders campaign for the vision that the senator had for the spark. He's the spark. We are the fire. And leaders like me and others, and they could not stand for that to happen. And so they rigged the game in 2016 and also in 2020. I don't know if you remember reading the articles where the powerful elites, they got together on Martha's Vineyard. You know, the New York Times and other publications wrote about this. Like, how can we stop this? We got to stop this from happening. And they were able to stop it, but it's temporary. Because there is a rise and there's an uprising in this country, and there will be a day of reckoning. Because what goes up, when we're talking about natural law, right? Now we do know that what goes up must come down. You will not be able to oppress and suppress the people forever. And unfortunately, we have a duopoly where the powerful elites are really just the same. They are in the same rooms together on a regular basis. And it is really about the elites of both parties who want to keep the status quo because it benefits them. And those of us who believe in justice in all of its forms, we cannot sit idly by and let this happen, continue to happen. And there's gonna be an uprising. We see it already, Paul. I mean, look at the labor movement and the uprising that is happening. I think that is just the beginning of a larger uprising that we're gonna see in this country over the next decade.
Well said. And I do see it as one giant corporate party. They own the debates, everything, and no outsiders. And the Democrats will work harder to keep the progressives out than they do against the right-wing fascists.
Well, don't I know it. That happened to me in two campaigns. Yeah. Well, four, really. Two for the senator. And then my two attempts to go to Congress. They rained down hellfire on me both times to stop me from getting there.
Why can't people see through it? And I know the answer already. The corporate corrupt media, which is owned by the same people that own both parties in the narrative, they kept saying, oh, Bernie can't win. And I kept saying, well, whoever gets the most votes wins. Yeah, true. So if he gets more votes, he wins. Yeah, but he can't win. Well, how can he not win if he's, it's like who's on first? But the constant thing about nonsense and both sides. And I really feel the oligarchy wants fascism now, has decided. And I think we're headed that way, barring a miracle.
Yeah. But you know who talks about miracles all the time? My beloved Marianne. It is going to take a miracle. And miracles come by way of people. And that's why I continue to hold out hope. Hope is an action word. And I continue to have faith. In my Christian tradition, faith without works is dead. So faith and work come hand in hand. And so we got to bring those forces together to get that miracle. It is going to happen.
How do we break that structural gridlock?
By doing things like we're doing right now, Paul. I mean, you have an incredible platform and you have conversations with people like me and Marianne and so many others. We are planting seeds in the hearts of people. There are people listening to us right now who are going to say, damn, they are right. You know, maybe they'll have a conversation with another person and another person and another person. And that spark is going to cause the inferno to happen. It is similar to the spirit that came across this country in 2015, the latter part going into the presidential, when Senator Bernard Sanders said that he was going to run. You remember he was at that press conference. Nobody was there but his family. People like, this dude can't win. And then when he said, I am not going to take money from big, you know, I'm not taking any PAC money. And they had really said, okay, this dude is not serious. He's going to run for president with small dollar donations. We're going to laugh him off the stage. And what happened? He ended up raising more money than Clinton did by the power of the people. And so we just got to remind folks of where we have been, where we are, and where we can go. And we got to say it over and over and over and over and over again. We got to plant seeds. We got to cultivate the soil. And it is happening again. The labor movement, you know, think people like Christian Smalls and others, Reverend Barber with the Poor People's Movement, BLM, you know, Occupy. You and I can name so many. I'm calling it a snapshot for a lack of, but there were multiple moments, even just in our lifetime, where we saw that spark happen. We got to recapture it in a big way and then never let it go out. We got to keep it going. It got to be like a snowball rolling down the hill. You don't stop. And we're picking up people all along the way. And then it's going to get to a point where it can't be stopped. Like we're a runaway. We're a freight train, baby. We can't be stopped. That is what has to happen. That same zeitgeist during the civil rights movement, you know, the same zeitgeist where my ancestors, you know, got together with some allies, but Black people freed Black people. Let's get this straight. White folks didn't free white folks. It was the spirit and the fight of Black folks that brought that. See, we need those spirits across centuries to mount up for us in the 21st century. And that is when that change is going to happen. It's happening. It's happening.
Yeah, the great Victor Hugo had that line. There's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come.
Come on. That's it.
Well, I hope it is here. And the young people are not being fooled by the con.
No, they are not. Thank God. They are not.
No, they are not. I talk to them everywhere, and they are wide awake. And I think the most alarming issue, and I think it is the big issue, fascism would be part of this too, but the climate change is here. It's not coming. I've had a lot of the scientists on. I did one of the great ones 2 days ago, Bill McGuire from England with Hot House Earth. And Mama Earth, you don't care what you're thinking. If you don't get an alignment here, it's been around 8 billion years, maybe longer, you go away. And if we're so arrogant that we think we can somehow usurp natural forces, we're going to end up in a layer of dust like the dinosaurs and the mammoth, and sooner rather than later.
That's exactly right. And Mama Earth is going to be all right. It is us who will not be all right. She is going to outlive all of us. It is us and the entire ecosystem that we are putting in danger because of our arrogance. That's what it, you know, Paul, and world leaders get together all the time to conspire and to make war. Why can't we get world leaders to come together to fight climate chaos? Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? Oh, my God.
Well, $10 trillion of jobs and green economy, the spirit of a people coming together universally, food for everybody, housing, the basic things we're talking about, the new age of man, the new beginning, and our survival. There's plenty here. It is the Garden of Eden. We need to share it. And like you say, the Earth won't care. We'll be gone. Earth won't even remember. We were just like a nuisance for like half a second of the Earth's life exponentially. Be like, you know, it would be like, and the Earth will reboot 5 million years later. There'll be all kinds of beautiful species and the seas will be clear. May not do a dumbass mountain biped again. But I mean, it's all going to be fine. But why not do it right? And why not do it together?
Why not? That is the question. Arrogance is a part of it, you know. And have people like Elon Musk, you know, talking about Mars. Jesus, you guys have fucked it up down here. Please don't go to Mars and do the same thing.
There's no water in Arizona. You can't go to Mars. There's nothing there. We can't even build a dome out in Arizona. It's here in our backyard, let alone go to. That's fantasy. That's sci-fi fantasy.
But again, it speaks to a type of arrogance that we're just going to go up there and colonize on Mars. You know, how do you know that the people on Mars, you know, or the other living things in the universe want us? Please stay far away from us, because if you're going to do up here what you did down there, we want none of it.
And by the way, I'm all for shooting the billionaires off into space in a rocket. I'll help fund that. You notice that Bezos was so upset about the Queen, but not about Mississippi's water or the people that die in his warehouses.
Oh, they got their priorities right, don't they?
What do you do to recharge and not burn out and hang yourself? Do you meditate? Do you get out in the woods? How do you stay grounded and whole?
I do. Now, I don't get out in the woods enough. There's some beautiful metro parks in Cleveland, Ohio that I make sure that I walk. I need to do that a little more because I love nature. I love water. But I do meditate and I pray and I listen to beautiful music. And Paul, now this is the first time I ballroom dance. I just started taking some ballroom dancing lessons.
Breaking news on What Matters Most.
It's breaking news on What Matters Most. And what does matter most is finding a way to recenter yourself, no matter who you are. Now, I think, Paul, this is one of the most important things that have come up in our conversation, only because people are under so much stress. And so I do want to encourage people, because my mother died so young and it was stress and brain aneurysm. You have to find a way, whether it's walking through a park or getting a massage or a pedicure, whatever you're into, a hug, a scripture, a quote, taking 5 minutes to yourself affirmations, poetry, whatever it takes, you got to do it. You got to do it because we can't save anybody else unless we save ourselves. You know, when you're on an airplane, they say, if the mask come down, put it on yourself first. Why? Because if you can't breathe, you dying, you can't help anybody else. Paul is so, so important. And what I discovered as I'm going through this new phase in my life is, you know, I've always wanted to take some dance lessons. I decided the hell I'm going to do it. And you cannot be sad or mad when you're dancing. So whether you're taking formal lessons or you just put on your favorite music and just dance around your room, do that. Dancing and music, it makes you happy.
You already, you're too young to be grandma.
And my grandbaby, Paul, too. A lot of people don't know, but I'm a yaya. I am. Thank you. Sometimes I'm out with them and people think they're my children. I'm like, yes. I'm young. I'm the 21st century. But yeah, they bring a lot of joy, and my son. So, you know, communing with my family, but my grandbabies, because I see, you know, the future. And when they're toddlers, you know, they're curious, they're fearless. They're at a time in their lives where no limitations, right? And so I get to relive that through them in a deeper way because I'm a little older, you know, than when I had my son. And I get to relive this, everything that I need to know about life, Paul. I'm learning from toddlers, everything.
They teach you a ton. Will you make a promise, though, to the worldwide audience that you will never appear on Dancing with the Stars?
You want me to say I will never appear? I can't say.
I heard you laughing. I wish you hadn't taken the phone away.
Never. I mean, maybe if they call the sister up, I might do it. But it's something that I had not thought of. Now, you just put that into the universe.
I make fun of that show all the time because I think all the corrupt people end up on it, man. They were trying to get the head of Egypt on there, the guys.
Oh, were they?
I mean, they normalize everything, man. Half the Trump cabinet was on there dancing around, you know, with swastikas.
But you know what? Then the progressives need to be represented too, Paul. We need to be everywhere. That's one way of looking at it.
Well, you better win if you get on that damn thing.
I know you got a plane to catch, so I don't want to take too much time. Will you come back, please, and do a part two?
I promise I would love to come back with you. You are a fascinating personality and a hell of an interviewer. And before I go, I want the people who love you and listen to you, I want them to love and listen to me. I have a new show coming up on TYT Unbossed with Nina Turner, and it debuts on October the 17th. And people can subscribe on YouTube, Facebook, it's free. So I want them to go to tyt.com/unbossed. tyt.com/unbossed.
Make sure I get that link and I'll put that in there for everybody.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, of course. What an honor. I can't wait to see what you do with that. In closing, will you leave us and leave the worldwide audience, all these people, got 500,000 people around the world sometimes who listen, with an inspiring word to go forward? Because not everybody's flying as high as we are in this moment. Some are, but some might be at the end of a rope, or at the end of a third shift, or in a gulag, or who God only knows, or dealing with their lost somebody, or just hard. Life's hard. It's hard to be a human being. It's hard to be in this dimension. What inspiring word will you leave? Because sometimes just one spark of hope, an inspiring word, will change the moment for someone, or give them enough fuel to take the next step or two.
Oh, this is what I love about you. Okay, I'm channeling James Baldwin, the great American novelist, and he is so quotable, but this is the one that's on my heart right now. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. And so I want the people who are listening to us today to know that we understand that they may be facing some hard challenges, some life-altering challenges, some challenges that shake their world asunder, that they can go through it, they can deal with it, that change can and will come. And we do understand that life is really, really hard, but life can be really, really beautiful. And all of that change starts in the mind and what they manifest and what they put out into the universe. just taking one more step. You know, Dr. King talked about you might not be able to see the entire staircase, but just take the step. Yeah.
You've been listening to the What Matters Most podcast, a 100% listener-supported program. If you feel inspired, please go to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/whatmattersmost and join our family. So until the next time, stay inspired and in the light.